look ahead to the long Easter weekend, we're rounding up what's on at the cinema. And joining me today is the film critic for The Telegraph, Tim Robey. We'll be discussing broody French thriller Disorder, Disney's latest animated caper Zootopia, and there's even a superhero showdown in the mix too with Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. That's all to come on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. Stick around. Our first film today is Disorder, starring Matthias Schoenaerts and Diane Kruger as a bodyguard and the wife of a Lebanese businessman. Schoenaerts' character, Vincent, is an ex-soldier suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, whose latest job is to look after his businessman's wife while he's away on business. But of course, trouble ensues. Tim, welcome to the show. Now, Belgian actor Matthias Schoenaerts seems to be on a bit of a roll at the moment. How's his performance here?
Yeah, he's really good at these kind of parts, actually, because he's playing a very kind of brooding, troubled, almost kind of Brando-esque character. Reminded me of the character he played in Bullhead, which was his breakout film, the Belgian film. And he's got this really kind of like very muscular kind of physique and this very interior kind of acting style. I think he's really good. And he's also, you know, he's a slightly disturbing character. The post-traumatic stress, it means that he's unpredictable, he's kind of temperamental. You don't quite know at what points he's going to suddenly just kick off. And so as a bodyguard, that puts him in an interesting position. I think the film is quite good. The premise is solid. It runs into a real plausibility problem in the middle, though. I don't know if people are following The Night Manager on TV at the moment, but there's actually parallels with the story there in terms of the relationship with this character who's sort of an arms dealer, that person's wife, and then this new guy on the team's bodyguard. It becomes involved with her, or at least certainly takes an interest in her. But there's this real moment in the middle of the film where I just really felt that the kind of air went out of it. And it never quite comes back from that. It's hard to say without spoiling the plot, but essentially the characters do something, they go back to a dangerous place which makes no sense for them to go to. And I think there the writing is slightly damaging to the kind of overall effect of the film.
Well, we're going to discuss the latest superhero movie a little bit later in this show, and it does strike me that sometimes in those sorts of films, things can be a little bit implausible. They can do some silly things, but because of the kind of film you're watching, you kind of, you know, you feel a bit silly if you expect it all to make perfect sense. With the kind of tone we're going for here, do you think because of the way the events are depicted, you do sort of expect a certain level of plausibility all the way through?
Yeah, I think you do. It's sort of set up as quite a gritty and realistic scenario, and we're asked to kind of buy into these characters quite seriously. And it's not that it becomes like silly or overtly preposterous. It just makes a false move, if you like, and just does something that you think, hang on a minute, would they really do that? As soon as you're asking those kind of questions, then the credibility of it does suffer. But on the other hand, I think it's really strongly acted, and that this director, Alice Wienerkor, who made it, I think is quite an interesting and promising talent. She gets a performance out of Schoenaerts, which I think is as good as he's given in anything. Really think he's excellent in it. And Diane Kruger, I think, is quite underrated. I liked her in Inglourious Basterds, for instance. And I think she's been good in some French films. And in this, again, I think it's a good part for her. She kind of has to play her cards close to her chest. She's kind of in this tricky position where her husband is clearly quite a bad guy, but she's got a kid and she's sort of trapped in this scenario. And can she really trust this bodyguard who seems like a very aggressive, violent figure, even though he's trying to kind of help her out? So there's a lot of ambiguity in play, and even that, I think, keeps it going. And I was still engaged with the characters even at the end because of the performances, not so much because of the plotting.
Well, no matter how deep and dark I think a thriller is, a good thriller always needs to be fun as well. Did you get a sense that you were still having fun? Were you engaged all the way through? Did you feel like you were really like riding the roller coaster of the plot?
It's not that kind of thriller, I guess. It's more of a, you have that kind of knot in the stomach feeling where you feel as though something kind of bad is going to happen quite soon. And the music is very kind of low and ominous and kind of builds up that kind of sense of dread that you're expecting them to get some sort of attacked, perhaps by unknown forces who have something to do with the husband's job. You sort of spend a lot of time waiting for that to happen. When it does, it's quite brutal. In fact, it's towards the end, it becomes extremely bloody. I think perhaps off-puttingly so for some viewers. I thought that it was within the kind of realm of the film's kind of realism, if you like. That was okay. It's got quite a curious ending, though. Again, it's not got a thrillery ending. It's got quite a psychological ending. And the very last shot, which I won't give away, all I'll say about it is that it's determinedly ambiguous in terms of the outcome for these characters. What we're seeing, we can't necessarily believe. So that's an interesting wrinkle on it as well. I think it's a solid film. It just makes one mistake in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Well, Disorder arrived in French and Belgian cinemas last year, but it's now out in the UK and Ireland and will hit Polish and Canadian cinemas in the coming months as well. Interesting international mix there. Now, for something for the whole family to enjoy over the Easter weekend, and it's not an Easter egg, it's actually the latest Disney release, Zootopia, or Zootropolis, depending on where you happen to be. Now, this film follows Judy Hopps, a rabbit from rural Bunnyborough, following her dream to become the first rabbit officer in the police department of Zootopia. Let's hear a clip.
ZPD's first rabbit officer, Judy Hopps.
You ready to make the world a better place?
Bad news in this city gripped by fear.
What can you tell us about the animals that went savage? Are we safe?
This is priority one.
Hopps. Parking duty.
Sir, I'm not just some token bunny.
You strike out, you resign.
Now, Tim, as we just heard, things perhaps don't go quite to plan for poor Judy Hopps. Not at first, anyway. What happens?
Well, essentially, she's this very kind of new recruit on the Zootopia. Or in fact, in the UK, they're calling it Zootropolis for some reason. I haven't quite got to the bottom of that. But she's the new recruit on the force. She's the first bunny that has been brought in. And this, the world that it creates is one in which all animals kind of coexist. And there's more or less harmony between them. But predators are still out there. Predators, and perhaps they give way to their sort of atavistic instincts sometimes and become bullies again towards the smaller creatures. So it's kind of makes sense that the police force of animals is largely manned by enormous creatures like rhinos and elephants and this and that. So this bunny is very out of place. And when she arrives, she just gets put on traffic cop duty. She becomes a meter maid, essentially. She's given nothing to do. But actually, she's quite clever. And she kind of gets to the bottom of this mystery. And it involves teaming up with the fox, played by Jason Bateman's character, who's this kind of very cynical hustler figure who basically takes her for a ride at first, but then kind of realizes that there's kind of more to her than meets the eye. I'm not really a walkover for this sort of film because they can be quite silly. I'm not a great fan of like the Madagascar series, for instance, which I think perhaps you could compare this to. But this one really is quite sophisticated, and I found it extremely funny all the way through. I think the writing is excellent. It manages to set up this quite clever parable about, you know, different animals coexisting harmoniously, but then there being this sort of undercurrents of resentment and prejudice and bigotry. You know, it's all about kind of what you assume a fox is capable of, and there's quite interesting kind of racial dynamics within that if you kind of apply it to, you know, our present situation. So I thought that was clever and not unrisky, if you like. It really kind of pushes some quite serious buttons, this film, while also remaining just kind of a very dynamic and kind of giddy ride all the way through. One of the directors made Bolt, which I think is one of the best Disney animations in the last 10 years, and rightly holds its place sort of alongside some of the great Pixar films. Bolt was an excellent film. And this reminded me of that in a lot of ways. I think it has that the same kind of level of ingenuity and wit all the way through. And it kind of never lets up, really. I thought it was great.
We are, it seems, a long way from when Prince Philip was rescuing Sleeping Beauty from the creepy castle in the Disney classic. It does strike me, however, that films like, especially Disney films, they really need to be very clever with the way they approach these sorts of themes, because Disney films are so known now for having the princess having to be rescued by the man and the princess having to, you know, really fight for love more than anything else. But here we obviously have a female character who's on a career path. It sort of reminds me a little bit of, not a Disney film, but the Paddington movie that came out a little while ago, where we clearly had some themes in there that were all about immigration and racism, but it wasn't heavy-handed at all, and it really came across as quite unexpected if you were walking out of the cinema thinking about it afterwards. How are those sorts of themes approached here? My hope is that it doesn't feel like it's beating you over the head with its moral stick.
No, it doesn't. It's done quite lightly on the whole. There are some sort of telling moments where it becomes very clear what they're going for. One of the things I like is that the main character seems a bit of a goody two-shoes at first. She seems very kind of right on and sort of seems to be very comfortable with her own kind of liberal position on the rest of animal kind. But then the film challenges her own hidden prejudices, if you like. She actually carries a kind of fox repellent spray around with her because of a kind of brutal incident in her childhood. And when the fox sees that, he's actually quite thrown by that because he's like, you assume I'm some kind of bad guy, essentially. And she's really sort of thrown by that, and she kind of questions her own sort of hidden prejudice, as I say, which I think is a an interesting thing to do, and not just have your main character as wholly kind of wholly perfect. She actually has to kind of undergo some sort of transformation. There's also just some really clever stuff. There's a scene where they have to go to get basically a kind of ID form to kind of help the plot along so they can figure out the location of the villains. And they go to this kind of very municipal kind of red tape office, and it's manned only by sloths. And they are incredibly slow, and the kind of rubber stamping happens in slow motion, and like everything is taking just forever. And that scene is milked so, so well and so funnily. I think it's an absolute classic of its kind, that scene, actually, I think. And they bring them back at the end because they're kind of like the stars of the show.
I think we've all felt like that before. Well, that is Zootopia, or Zootropolis, or Zoo something else, depending on where you happen to be in the world. It's out now in the UK and worldwide.
I'm getting slow in my old age, Alfred.
Even you got too old to die young.
Not for lack of trying.
He has the power to wipe out the entire human race. If we believe there's even a 1% chance that he is our enemy, we have to take it as an absolute certainty.
The greatest gladiator match in the history of the world.
Well, the latest addition to the long line of superhero movies, getting even longer, it seems, by the minute. It's currently swooping onto cinema screens now, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. And if it wasn't enough that these heroes were having to fight off the villains, it does seem, for some reason, that they're now fighting each other, too. Tim, fill us in on the storyline, if you will, first.
Well, they've been quite clever in the trailers not to give away the reason for the kind of clash between them in the film. I mean, you sort of assume maybe they've got an axe to grind of some kind, but it has all to do with Lex Luthor, in fact, Jesse Eisenberg playing him. The character originated in the 70s film by Gene Hackman. And subsequently by Kevin Spacey, actually, in Superman Returns.
Yes, very briefly by Kevin Spacey.
Jesse Eisenberg's spin on Lex Luthor is much more hyperactive. He's a bit like Mark Zuckerberg from The Social Network, gone mad, basically.
Yes.
He's actually also, he's just maddening. I don't know if you agree. I found the performance just kind of infuriating.
Yeah, I sort of have to agree with you. It does feel as though he's had maybe a few too many cans of Red Bull or something.
Exactly. And he's really the film's one hope to achieve any kind of levity or humor, because Zack Snyder, as he already established with Man of Steel, his Superman reboot, is not going to be giving us a barrel of laughs, essentially. You know, this is a pretty humorless, somber, and rather po-faced kind of revisitation of the kind of lore of these superheroes. Jesse Eisenberg fails to be funny, so all you're left with is basically a kind of brooding death match between the two of them, which goes on forever. I mean, it's 2.5 hours long, this film, and it really feels it.
Mm.
To be honest with you, he's almost achieved the impossible. I slightly started hankering after the kind of silly levity of like the Batman and Robin and the Batman Forever, the Joel Schumacher instances, which is heresy to anyone who likes comic book movies. You know, people hate those films. But the reaction against them, not only in Christopher Nolan's Batman universe, but also now in these ones, has been so kind of extreme that it's just gone mad. I mean, I found it really difficult to engage with, extremely confusing.
Mm.
There were moments in it where hallucinations occur and kind of minor characters kind of suddenly pop up or come through the wall and give Superman a bit of advice, or I just genuinely had no idea who these characters were. I'm not immersed in the mythology, and I was like, who on earth is this?
I felt like there were so many threads being thrown out here that it didn't really play out like a film. Like, you really expect a film to have a cohesive storyline, and even if it is setting up for sequels and whatever else, you still expect to have some sort of cohesive identity as a standalone film. So if you go back to watch that film, you'll understand what this one is about, but it also leads into this and this and this. This one felt like 2.5 hours of setup. And
yeah,
to really enjoy it and understand what's going on, you need to watch a whole bunch of other films that haven't even been made yet. And that kind of feels like a bit of a betrayal on what a film itself is supposed to be.
Yeah. It reminded me of a lot of the things that I disliked about The Dark Knight Rises, which I thought was much weaker than the other two films in that trilogy, just in terms of this kind of being bogged down in all these subplots and not really successfully interweaving them. I also feel as though the female characters suffer hugely from this.
Definitely.
I mean, basically your choices in this film are you get to be Lois Lane, who gets dropped off buildings, briefly drowns, constantly gets rescued, at one point throws away the most useful object into a swimming pool, and that basically that's all she gets to do. Or you get to be Superman's mother, Diane Lane, who's basically just a whimpering hostage. Or you get to be Holly Hunter, who's the senator who briefly opposes the agenda of Lex Luthor before a spoilery thing happens in the middle of the film, which prevents her from doing anything. Or you get to be Wonder Woman, who the trailers hold out as kind of like perhaps, you know, the great revelation. She gets like 5 minutes. Mm. She basically gets to be a sidekick.
And she oddly shows up seemingly out of nowhere as well. I mean, she's kind of dropped in mysteriously towards the beginning of proceedings. So it's not as if she just literally pops up out of nowhere. But it's sort of done oddly in the same way that Batgirl was treated back in 97 when George Clooney took the ill-fated step into the Batman boots. Alicia Silverstone popping up out of nowhere as Alfred's long-lost niece. And then mysteriously appearing as Batgirl in this costume that somehow Alfred had created because of his future premonition of what was going to happen. Very bizarre way to treat a character. But so many years later, after so many comic book films, you would expect that we've learnt how to create some sort of anticipation. But no. She's kind of shoehorned in there.
Totally. She feels like window dressing to me. It's like they're aware of what a kind of Boise proposition this is. You've basically got two very powerful figures pummeling each other the whole length of the movie. And they have to bring on some sort of female characters. It doesn't seem as though this is like some sort of weird men's rights riposte to, you know, the kind of great female characters we've had lately in films like Mad Max Fury Road, Charlize Theron's character in that, and Rey in The Force Awakens. You know, we've had some great, great heroines in these kind of blockbusters lately. So it's like they're aware of the problem, so let's wheel on Wonder Woman as sort of, you know, to save face. But she only really gets to be a sidekick right at the end. And otherwise you're just dealing with this kind of grunting deathmatch scenario, and I don't think it's well played, and I don't think it's very good.
Painfully enough, the director of Mad Max was, of course, intended to direct this film. Originally, had the entire film cast, and then Warner Brothers pulled the plug. I think it was 2009. Such a shame. I'm expecting that there are a lot of sore heads about that decision. Just briefly, time is short, but there's a lot of attempts at giving this film a political overtone as well. We've got people like Anderson Cooper, Soledad O'Brien, Charlie Rose popping up in the film as themselves, sort of attempting to give it some sort of political weight, to bring up some sort of theories on why Batman might hate Superman. And it does feel as though Batman has kind of ventured into the far right political territory. It did get me thinking, but by the end of the film, I was left a little bit perplexed because the questions were asked, but no attempt was made to give them any answers, were there?
It's true, yeah. I mean, Christopher Nolan produced Man of Steel, and this world does feel like an extension of his Batman films, in which they became increasingly kind of right-wing, really. Batman becomes the kind of Avenger who knows what's good for Gotham, even though the people have no idea. And this Batman is sort of an extension of that one. But the problem is that if that means that Superman is the counterbalance to that, we really need to root for Superman. We really want Superman to kind of have some personality. And I feel as though Henry Cavill's performance is almost lethally bland. He really doesn't have much to play here at all. The kind of joy of the character, the fun of the character is leached away. Ben Affleck actually is a bit better as Batman, but he's not really given anything new to do with the character that hasn't been well established in all the other films. He's basically just kind of doing a solid enough job with the Batman we already know. And he does the growly voice thing, and, you know, that's fine. But I just think there's a real shortage of fun to be had in this film. And all of the attempts to kind of give it a bit of mythic weight and kind of drag in all these references to Copernicus, and it ends up looking very pretentious and quite misjudged.
Well, that was Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, which is out now in cinemas all around the globe. And that does indeed bring us to the end of this week's show. Thank you very much to my guest today, Tim Robey. You have been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. The show was produced by Holly Fisher and Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Now, don't forget to tune in to The Cinema Show later today. That's 20:00 here in London. You can head to monocle.com and download that as well. We'll be discussing more about Batman versus Superman and some other films out in the cinemas and streaming as well. But for now, from me, thank you very much for listening.